Welcome. This is Stan Lee of Marvel Comics warning you to look around you, your classmates, your friends. You never know which one of them may be a mutant.
Cyclops, Marvel Girl, the Angel, the Beast, Iceman, and their mentor, Professor Xavier. When banded together, these merry mutants become the X-Men, defenders of a world that hates and fears them. Xavier's Podcast for Gifted Youngsters, a bi-weekly show devoted to covering the X-Men saga from the beginning, one issue at a time. With your hosting trifecta, Michael Bailey, John M. Wilson, and J. David Weider.
And welcome to Xavier's Podcast for Gifted Youngsters, where we study the entire saga of the X-Men from the beginning. My name is J. David Weider, and with me is Michael Bailey.
Hello.
And John M. Wilson.
Howdy do.
And as I said, what we do is we cover the X-Men saga one issue at a time. Now, last time around, we did your emails, which was a fun episode. I hope you all enjoyed it. This time, we've got Uncanny X-Men number 6, which features a special guest appearance, and Michael has the synopsis on that one.
Yes, I do. X-Men number 6 was released on May 5th, 1964. It had a cover by Jack Kirby and Chick Stone of Submariner Joins the Evil Mutants as a special guest star, which is the Submariner. But it also features Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. So the credits to this is written with the flair of Stan Lee, drawn with the air of Jack Kirby, inked with the care of Chick Stone, and lettered on a dare by S. Rosen. He was really reaching there at the end, wasn't he?
Yeah.
A bit.
Air, flair, care, lettered on a bear? No, that doesn't work. Anyways, the X-Men are busy eating a wonderful meal made by Jean Grey because she's a girl and thus has to do all of the cooking. After a few lessons in table manners, Professor X brings up the Submariner and wonders if he too is a mutant, because this early in the game, anyone with superpowers might be a mutant, according to Professor X. Xavier says they need to get to Subby before Magneto takes an interest. Meanwhile, Magneto takes an interest. Magneto shows off the weapons he will use to make the Submariner yield, and thanks to an illusion by Mastermind, Magneto thinks the X-Men are there. The magnetic mutant lets loose with his weapon, but soon realizes he is being duped and bitch slaps Mastermind for getting out of line. After everything has calmed down, Magneto sits in a chair and does a little astral projection, well, because apparently Magneto can do that. Meanwhile, as the X-Men train in the danger room, Professor Xavier gets the same idea, and soon the two men are on the seafloor looking for Submariner. Magneto finds him first, and after watching Subby throw the world's biggest tantrum, Magneto enlists the aid of another to get Subby's attention. Back at the X-Mansion, Professor Xavier reveals that he has found Magneto through a very convoluted series of events. Soon, the X-Men are on a chartered boat, setting up a camera system to spot Magneto, and hilarity ensues. Underwater, Magneto's agent convinces the Submariner that he needs to meet this awesome Magneto guy because Magneto is a mutant and the Submariner could be one too. Namor heads to the surface, and after telling Magneto to shut up, he takes a walk around the island. Magneto thinks of using Wanda to get Namor on their side, and after an incident that causes Namor to get shocked pretty good, the Angel arrives and attacks. Prince Namor makes short work of Warren. It is only with the help of Beast and the Iceman that Angel is able to survive. Magneto wastes no time in attacking the ship and manages to blow it out of the water. The X-Men survive and get to the island via an ice bridge. Once there, Xavier orders Scott to be the first to head through a thick, thorny forest, but once on the other side, Scott is attacked by Quicksilver. Somehow Scott and Angel manage to get Quicksilver back to where the other X-Men are, and they attack. Magneto is unfazed by this and sets up another attack, but the Scarlet Witch begs him to stop. Magneto snaps at her, and apparently Namor hates men who are verbally abusive more than he hates the X-Men, and suddenly Magneto and Namor are fighting. Suddenly the X-Men arrive and attack. Magneto and the rest escape, except for the Scarlet Witch who won't leave without her brother. The X-Men show up, and Namor proves that he does have a thing for the Witch and demands that they release her brother. There is more Fighty McFightenstein as the X-Men and Namor throw down. Soon Xavier shows up with a mentally controlled Quicksilver and points out that he has no quarrel with Namor or the Witch and only has eyes for Magneto. Namor takes offense at what Xavier says, and after asking Prof X to step outside, Namor leaves in a huff. Magneto takes this opportunity to attack again, but Namor shakes it off and returns to the sea. Magneto and crew escape via a rocket, though Xavier reveals that he let this happen because the evil mutants can't be held against their will and can only join them when they're ready to renounce Magneto. The end.
This was a winner of an issue.
This was weird. This was so weird. Oh my God.
Was there a point for the two of you where you just checked out of the story?
Yes.
Okay. Cause my notes actually end.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. Around page three, I'm like, I'm out. I'm done. Do what you gotta do.
But before we talk about the story, I was just wondering, how do y'all fall down on the, is Namor a mutant thing? This used to be more of a debate, but now that there's a book called Namor the First Mutant, I guess it's less of a debate. But well, assuming that weren't the case.
No, because that was the tagline for John Byrne's Namor series.
Okay.
And it was the tagline for John Byrne's Namor series because the X-Men were really popular in 1990, and they figured if we put mutant on the title, maybe it'll sell. I have no problems with it. I mean, upon very close scrutiny, it falls apart completely because he's who he is because he's a half-breed, not so much that he's a mutant. Were the wings always part of it, John? And did other Atlanteans have wings?
No, other Atlanteans don't have wings. The wings on his feet are the only mutation I can find about him. Okay. Because Atlanteans are blue fish people, and humans are, you know, not blue, not fish people. And when you mix those together, you get Namor, but suddenly he has wings on his feet. So I'm guessing that that's the mutation. That's the only thing I can think of that has any logic to it.
That kind of works, though. I mean, really. If that is his mutation, that he can fly, then he's a mutant, because there are dumber mutations out there.
Right.
So, you know, his super strength, his being able to breathe underwater, that all comes from his ancestry, you know, his lineage. You know, his mother was a water breather. His father was human. And boy, is that a messed up origin. Good God. Because it seems like on one hand, she's in love with the guy, but on the other hand, she wants to kill him.
It sounds like most marriages to me. I don't know.
I don't know how long you've been married, Mike, but that's pretty much the standard.
I've been married for, this is going to be 8 years this year.
Michael loves his wife very much.
My wife and I get along. I can't help this.
He's not like other people. But, I should say that I am joking. My wife and I get along fantastically. But it's fun to joke about.
But
I'm glad that y'all are joking.
If nice. But if they want to declare that he's a mutant, then that's fine. I mean, if the wings are his mutation, go with God.
He was born with it, I guess. That's kind of a staple of the mutation, but that's a very thin, like, mentality.
It took me a long time to figure that one out, because for a long time I was like, no, he's not a mutant, just for the reason you said. He's of mixed race, or mixed ancestry, however you want to say it. But ultimately, after months of perusing this in my brain, I figured out, hey, there's wings.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just, my head hurt after reading this comic. And that's not me making fun of it because it's a Silver Age book. That is me judging it by other issues of this series that we have read. And other Marvel books of the time period. This one had more of a sense of making shit up as I go along than any of the previous issues.
Yeah.
So I don't know who wants to go first with their notes.
I've got a lot of notes. Well, I mean, for one thing, let's start with the cover, because the cover, I get a sense of nothing else in the cover but Namor. I mean, granted, he's right there in the center, but what the hell is going on, and why does Gene have that pointy mask?
New mask.
Yeah, we should probably point that
out. Actually, he had it in Fantastic Four 28 the month before, but we'll talk about that later.
Well, also, on page one, there's so much wrong with that page. What are they eating? What is that?
Pie?
Is it kielbasa? Well, no, but there's like gray kielbasa-looking things next to the teapot. Green soup.
It's blood sausage.
And like,
I'm assuming it's sausage of some kind. Are they eating breakfast or what the hell?
It's dinner. It says dinner.
Oh, okay. So they're probably eating. It's probably some kind of sausage. Sausages.
Someone should instruct Bobby though that ice cream is not just
ice. Yeah, I had so many issues with that. It's like, wow, he's putting frozen water on his pie. That's going to taste like crap in about 3 minutes.
I know, right?
Well, why?
Unless
he has his soggy pie.
unless his mutation allows him to put rock salt and sugar and cream into to secrete that from his fingers, I don't think it's really going to do anything.
Sweaty teenage boy hand ice cream. There it is.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez. It's like ass in my mouth. Oh.
Would you like a chocolate-covered pretzel?
Yeah.
Would you like to shut up?
Okay.
This is the first time we have started an issue without being in the training session.
No.
That is true.
Issue number two, they were running from inside town in their uniforms.
Okay, let me rephrase that. This is the first issue without a training session. Or is that even true either?
No, there's a training session further down.
There's a training session, John. I agreed with you before. I will not make that mistake again.
Okay, well, you know what? It had a cool beginning. That's all I'm saying. They're having dinner and Jean Grey's being a woman. Make me a sandwich.
Well, they said there's a cook there, so the cook is off. What happens when the cook leaves? Do they get mind wiped?
Yes.
Because, I mean, a lot of people...
Every day he goes home, his wife asks him how work was, and he goes, I really can't remember, and she eventually leaves him because she feels like he's not really going to work at all and is having an affair. And that man becomes the Silver Samurai.
Wow.
Or alternatively, he leaves Xavier's every day with a briefcase in hand and goes home and tells his wife about his day doing accounting.
Yeah. And now we will show the version of this scene where he goes home and mercilessly beats his wife.
You did this to me!
Was it because I didn't have dinner ready?
Wow.
Domestic abuse is not a laughing matter.
What if
unless
it's imaginary?
We talk about it,
yeah,
and then it's hilarious.
Okay, so my next thoughts on page three.
Okay,
I don't think I had the only thing I have for page two outside of like I mentioned in the synopsis that Xavier thinks that everybody with a superpower is a mutant. I'm expecting him to go, Captain America, maybe he's a mutant. What do you think? It's really creepy that the toad is bouncing like a small child on the bottom of page two.
Yeah.
Yeah, my note just says toad is annoying.
It's like, I'm trying to get your attention. I'm trying to get your attention. And then page three, the most useless fight amongst villains ever.
I actually did have a thought on page two that I forgot to write down, but I remember thinking it.
Okay.
This is one of the most contrived plot initiations I've ever read. Xavier is reading a newspaper about Namor, and he's like, huh, I wonder if Namor is a mutant. We must find him. We have to find him now, before Magneto can figure out that Namor might be a mutant. And then Magneto says, Namor might be a mutant. We must find him before Xavier realizes this.
And they're both in the same pose, too. Xavier,
yeah,
and Magneto.
Flipping In fact, Magneto could be Xavier with a hat.
I was thinking the same thing, actually.
But my thought on page 3 is that Magneto's carrying a gun.
A big Kirby-esque gun, and he's got a bunch of guns behind him, as a matter of fact.
He never really uses weapons because he has his uber powers. And it just seemed weird to me that he would be carrying a gun.
I do like the fact that Scarlet Witch's response to her brother saving him was, "Pietro, you saved me! Like, this doesn't happen."
Every issue.
Oh, man.
Pietro, you saved me.
Okay. Does anybody else have a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment on page 4 where Magneto suddenly starts astral projecting?
Yes. That's actually my note. How did you know? No joke. It actually says WTF.
I read that and went, where have we seen in...
we have seen it once before, though. He did it in one earlier issue. This is the second time.
Really? Why do I forget? I guess it was so bad I blocked it.
It was where it was a little bit different. Xavier went to him. And they met mentally, but he didn't astral project.
Yeah.
No, that's right, because Xavier was able to detect Magneto's attempts to contact him mentally from 2,000 miles away. And so Xavier sent his mental impulses to pull Magneto's astral form out of his body, and they met and had a little talk on the astral plane, and that's when Magneto swore they would forever be mortal foes. I remember that now.
Does it look like Page 4. You just gave us a mini synopsis. Yes, you remember that. Sorry.
It does look like, you all sit down. I'm going to sit down on my chair. Where's my porn?
Don't bring me a beer. You drank the last beer? Sorry.
Don't make me hit you again, Mastermind. Though, please, hit Mastermind again. I hate him. Page 4, why is Professor Xavier's astral form causing splashing in the water in that second panel?
Page 5, yes.
Or page 5, excuse me.
Astral forms do that.
Apparently. So, though I do have to admit that the amount of detail that Kirby put into the, you know, like all of the sea animals and stuff is actually kind of cool.
I like the octopus.
It's just kind of random, especially in that fifth panel. Like, I'm just chilling. Y'all just leave me alone.
Just waving at the white man walking by.
You know what you made me think of? How is Magneto
grabbing the rock in the sixth panel? What?
These two, Professor, I mean, when we know that supposedly the Illuminati was supposed to be joined at this time. Do you think Professor X and Doctor Strange had a conversation comparing their astral forms? And, Doctor Strange is like, mine doesn't make waves. What's your excuse? Never mind.
Well, I can walk in mine, so could I. Damn it. No, but Magneto is totally holding on to the rock in that sixth panel. And I'm very confused as to why. Why are you trying to hide? Why is your astral presence trying to hide in the middle of the ocean?
It looks like he's actually doing something kind of dirty to that rock on the other side of it. But
well, there's a lot of friction down underwater. So
you do what you got to do with what's at hand.
I like how on page 6, page 5 and 6, Professor Xavier knows that Magneto is coming because of the presence of evil. I do sense another presence, but it is an evil one coming closer and closer. It's Magneto. It can be no other. And then we pass the ad with the woman who's half naked, and we get to page 6. And whenever Namor is ranting and raving, one of his men is hiding behind a curtain. And he's like, I detect a presence behind me, so filled with evil that it chills my blood. So it's just like, whenever Magneto's in astral form, he radiates Darkseid.
It's a presence I haven't felt since. And then he walks away.
Yes.
What is the Beast balancing on, by the way, going back to page 4? Is that a rattle?
I don't know what that is.
That's really weird.
I just happened to flip back through.
It seems like a ball perched on a ball and then having like some sort of rattle perched on those balls. We are 14, evidently.
So to bring it back to page 6, on that first panel, it does look like Namor is yelling, "Balls!"
Okay, you know what's funny, though? He's ranting. He says, "Again, the Fantastic Four have defeated me. Again, the girl I love has spurned me." Side note, Fantastic Four number 27 editor. Fantastic Four 27 came out like 7 weeks before this book did. So this is the longest temper tantrum Namor has ever thrown.
He's been throwing it for days. It started with him just kind of grumbling. It's going to end with him kicking a puppy. I swear to God. little baby seahorse is going to swim by and he's going to snap its neck. I know seahorses don't have necks, but it's okay.
Do they not?
I thought they were invertebrates.
They might. I don't. I'm not a biology person.
Rachel, are seahorses invertebrates? Yeah, is it? My wife just reminded me that I'm on the internet and I can Google things.
They are not invertebrates. They are in the phylum Chordata, so they are vertebrates.
I would hate to be under the rule of Namor, because it looks like he just throws a freaking temper tantrum every time something doesn't go his way. Look at those people running like, "I just want to be a serf. Can't I just go plant vegetables and stuff?" Damn
it. For a guy who just found his kingdom, he's not being very nice to them.
Not at all.
Balls!
Balls. Page 7, I'm really uncomfortable by how Magneto is like pantomiming behind the poor messenger on panel 3. It's like he's trying to, like, he took the dialogue out. It's like, "No, really, dude, it doesn't hurt that much. Come on, come back to my place.
We can put in Oz on."
In the last panel.
So.
And the guy's turning around like, "Oh my God, I can't believe what he was wanting me to do."
What are these strange feelings inside?
What is this feeling so sudden and new?
You can tell that that's his island because there's a giant magnet on it.
Yeah.
It's not very subtle, is it?
I wonder where Magneto's island is. Oh, look, there's a mysterious island with a huge magnetic device emitting strange rays.
How does Magneto afford all these headquarters? We had Asteroid M, we had Santo Marco before that. These huge bases, and he's not wealthy.
This is his second remote island fortress.
Second island fortress, correct. But then he also had a... How did he even get the asteroid? I never even thought about it. I just assumed that all went well.
Because he's Magneto. He has an asteroid. I mean, that's all you really need to know.
All he has to do is find it. From then on, he can control it.
Okay. That's true. Here's another interesting question on page... On page 8, how did they get a pirate ship?
And why did they get a pirate ship?
Because it's awesome. I do like in the third panel that Bobby is trying to tune in Gilligan's Island, even though it's not on the air yet. I think. I don't know. But it looks like in that same panel, in that third panel, that Xavier is trying to sun himself. And I hate to tell Iceman on the bottom of page 8, but if you fall into a big pile of snow, you're still going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really are.
But that's his whipped cream snow, so who knows?
And, yes, this Gilligan's Island was not on the air yet.
Okay, so.
Wow, it came out, Gina's like, limber.
Yes, she is.
Wow.
She is doing the limbo rock.
What do you find out later when we get to the letter section how she pulled... What do you find out how she pulled a boner in the letter section?
Whoa!
Oh, I'm not making this up.
I know you're not making this up. Good question, page 9. Why is Namor putting on a furry cape?
Because Prince Namor needs no help from any man, but he does need a furry cape to look good.
I'm just curious because he's going in wearing underwear, essentially. Scaly underwear that he got at Aquaman's garage sale.
And but a really pimpin' crown.
Yeah. It's like, I must look good. Let me put on my furry cape and my trunks.
And I love how on panel 4, I, a mutant? Why has that thought never occurred to me before? Because Stan Lee just thought it up on Tuesday.
And I like the fact that by the last panel, he thinks he's a mutant. I must see this fellow mutant for myself. I must learn what his power is.
So he's kind of like a hypochondriac. It's like somebody Googling WebMD, finding out about, you know, malaria. Next thing you know, they're in the emergency room.
Next thing you know, prostate cancer. I do like the fact that Magneto is totally willing to throw Scarlet Witch under the proverbial bus and use her as enticement for Namor. Hey, you're a girl with breasts. You go get him to be on our side.
It's very, it's, what's his frickin' name? It's very Lot and Sodom of him.
Yes.
Like, to be offering up his daughter in exchange for...
Well, they don't know that yet, though.
We don't know that yet, but Magneto might know it.
Yes, but at this point, Magneto doesn't know he knows it.
Which, Stan doesn't know that Magneto might know it. I don't know.
I'm not talking story-wise. I'm talking as this was published. Magneto.
Right. As it was published, of course he doesn't know it.
So, but yeah. No, I thought about that. It's just like, but I do like the fact that knowing what we know, to take this joke even further, knowing what we know about the Ultimate Universe, that look on Quicksilver's face in that fourth panel does say a lot, doesn't it?
It's my woman.
But she's mine. Let my sister go, Magneto, or by thunder. What are you going to do? Seriously. You're fast. He can rip all the iron out of your body.
He has those two wisps of hair.
Yeah, that is true.
He could do something with those.
What a love Submariner's pose at the bottom left panel. I just realized it. Hey,
I'm going to thrust my crotch towards this machine. Yep. Maybe it'll tell me what it does. Everything on this aisle is powered by magnetism, including my penis.
And there are times when Scarlet Witch's head seriously looks like a big pink bowl of chocolate ice cream. Yes, it does.
I hate her mask here. I hate it so much.
I don't even know how she puts it on. Does it, like, tape in the back, or is there a zipper?
It looks like a paper bag that she cut a face into and colored with crayons.
And don't you hate, like, when you're wearing something that fits under your chin and you talk and, like, you don't really feel like you can talk because it's like, keeping your chin from moving properly? Mm-hmm. And she has to deal with that all the time. And no wonder she flipped out and created the House of M.
I really want to...
Bottom
of page 10.
Yeah.
Unless you're...
I'm done.
Okay, I'll approach him, tap him on the shoulder, and then... Oh, no! I carelessly made a gesture. It will cause my hex power to operate, because every time I fucking move my hand, bad things happen. I mean, what was that like to grow up with? I mean, come on.
I want that bottle. Oh, and Mommy's head just got hit with a beam from the ceiling.
And every time she rubs one out, the bed turns into, like, a bed of, you know, like, mushrooms or something.
Oh. I like mushrooms, and I will never eat them again. God damn you, Sean Wilson. I hate you and everything you stand for.
It's not really going to be bad to be her, though.
I will say this. The scene is kind of grinding to a halt by this point, you know, because on page 11, you know, Namor gets hit with the electrical jolt, and they all start talking again, and I'm like, and suddenly Angel shows up, and I'm like, thank God, because I really don't want to put up with these people talking about how... So that's the famous Submariner. He's just a man in swimming trunks. What a disappointment.
See the wings on his feet? How small they are. What use can they be? They're the readers.
Yeah.
And Toad looks like...
But I was really happy that... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In that panel, Toad looks like he's rubbing one out, to use John's phrase.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's wearing those trunks. Oh, yeah. And Magneto is desperately trying not to look. My eyes will stay straight ahead, no matter how much I want to look. Oh, God, it's corkscrew. Oh, it's corkscrew shaped.
Oh, Lord.
This one's gone up. That was pretty quick. Though.
Okay. Moving on.
So no one has anything?
No. I can't follow
that. For the
rest
of the issue?
I'm on page 16. If y'all have anything before page 16.
No, go ahead.
Not really. I think the whole ice bridge thing is just stupid. Not as stupid as them driving or riding in a pirate boat, but I like that Professor X on a boat has to have a wooden wheelchair. I'm kind of confused by that, but okay. It's like, wouldn't he have a normal wheelchair that he would take on the boat? Is this some like seafaring law that I'm not aware of? But just...
And, like, if the point of the boat was so that it wouldn't be iron, well, Magneto, I mean, there would still be, like, nails holding things together. But obviously, that's not what the Stan and Jack were thinking, because even though they're in a wooden ship, it's still torn apart by magnetic rays. And no one knows why.
I do like that that Professor Xavier proves that deep down he really hates Scott. Into the spine roots. You first, Cyclops. Quicksilver on page 15, by the way, looks like the Human Torch and Captain America had a green baby.
Yeah, he really does.
Wait, who?
This is the dumbest way to show super speed ever, by the way. And that's nothing against Jack Kirby. I was just expecting more.
What is he doing to Scott?
He's tackling him? And asking if he likes to watch Gladiator films?
I was going
to
say, that's not a natural tackle. How do you... He's upside down.
They're dancing. It's impossible. No one can get to this position with such blinding speed.
So what about page 16, John?
I just think that it's like awesomely ridiculous that the driving wedge that forces apart the alliance between Namor and Magneto, it's not some like power struggle with Namor being better or Magneto being better, and it's not some like conflict of opinion over how they should treat the X-Men. No, Namor refuses to ally with someone who would speak harshly to a woman.
I actually really like that. It's like, I don't like the way you're talking to her. Because that strikes me as something a hot-headed guy like Namor would do. It's like, I don't really like how you're talking to her. And now I'm going to beat your ass if you don't stop.
But after he's tried to kidnap Susan and force her to love him so many times, it just seems really odd.
Touché.
I don't know. It seemed like almost the opposite of women's lib to me.
Is he really trying to force her or just working really hard to convince her?
Both?
Well, I mean, where's the line?
I don't know. I actually kind of like it. It is a very typical Stan Lee thing to do, that it wouldn't be like the normal thing. Like, it could have been jealousy that made, you know, the two turn against each other. It could have been, you know, any number of things, but to Namor, it's just like, I don't like the cut of your jib. So this alliance is over.
We are so done professionally.
Though on the top of page 17, does it look like in that second panel that they got caught into the gamma bomb that Bruce Banner got caught in Incredible Hulk number 1?
And Toad is Rick Jones.
No, Toad's actually Bruce Banner. Mastermind would be Rick Jones.
That's right.
Oh, man. This is when the story completely falls apart, though. Because there's really nothing... Nothing consequential happens through the rest of the story.
But they have 6 pages to fill.
Yeah, it's basically people flip sides and finally Namor leaves in a huff. Because you know what? It's the Silver Age. And Namor is always going to leave in a huff. It's what he does.
As opposed to the other ages? Is that his move?
I don't know. Do you disagree, David?
No. I told you, I checked out around halfway through the issue. I think as soon as I saw the magnet-shaped island, I'm like, I'm out. I hope John and Michael have some notes for this issue.
It's kind of sad, though, because really the first, you know, 5 issues have been fairly good. I mean, we've had some wonky moments, to be sure, but you're going to have wonky moments in the Silver Age. And this was the first one. This was the first issue that felt like they were just clocking time.
Right.
You know, this was the first one that felt like, you know, we just need an issue to fill, so we're going to bring back the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and we're going to bring back Namor, because holy crap, we did that enough in the first couple issues of the Fantastic Four, and it seemed to work like gangbusters over there. So, the bad guy is Namor, and in the next issue, the bad guy is Doctor Doom, and in the issue after that, it's Namor and Doctor Doom.
Right.
It almost feels like when you're a little kid playing. It really does. Like the adventures and stuff. It's like that scene in episode 1 where they congratulate R2-D2 for 5 minutes. Towards the beginning.
Yes.
And that totally feels like something you would have done with your action figures as a kid. This has that same feeling to me. And it, you know, the artwork isn't bad. It's outside of Quicksilver's running, which I really don't appreciate. You know, the art is very dynamic. Jack Kirby still continues to do things with the comic book page that have never been done before. Or if they have been done, he kind of... I mean... Okay, going back to page 17, I made fun of that second panel. But at the same time, that's a dynamic panel of a bunch of people getting thrown back by an explosion. I mean, it's just like, you know, it looks like Mastermind's unconscious and Toad's screaming like a little girl.
Right.
So, I mean, everything, you know, artistically, I had no problems with this issue outside of the, you know, wooden wheelchair. It's just story-wise, it is the... I'm hoping that there aren't more like this. Because if there are, I'm going to be very depressed.
And
realize why this series was canceled.
Well, and the other side of all this is that Stan Lee really wants Namor to work. Because yes. Namor was, you know, one of the big two before they became the big three. Namor's the first Marvel character that's still around. And even though Human Torch got his own title first, reading the Golden Age comics, Namor's strip was superior to Human Torch on several levels. Bill Everett was doing some big stuff back then, and he wants Namor to work now, but he doesn't really have a solo idea for him. So he's just trying to plug him in everywhere as much as he possibly can. This one did, well, I'm not going to say it worked less than the time that Namor had a Hollywood studio and lured the Fantastic Four out there to film a movie as a way to capture them. I'm not going to say it works less than that one, but it is definitely one of the lesser working Namor stories of, you know, this era.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
That was a real issue of Fantastic Four.
Well, in Fantastic Four, you actually got him as a villain. You got him with some sort of motivation. Here, he just, I don't know, he just showed up.
Because he's a mutant, and he must ally himself with his fellow mutants who speak harshly to women, therefore we are done. I don't care if you're a mutant or not. The only other specific note that I had on the story was page 22. And eighth panel, which is the big finale panel when they're all looking up in the sky, I don't know, to see the big, really cool red magnet ship flying away. Look, our prisoners are escaping. Jean Grey said something that for Jean Grey is rather out of character from what we've seen so far. I'm glad to see them go. That witch is much too attractive. She's really? Not usually this shallow. I mean, I'll expect Sue Storm to say that. I'll expect Liz Allen or Betty Brant to say that. But Jean Grey doesn't usually say things like that. And then Angel realizes that this is just the kind of woman for him. So he moves in. Know something, Jeannie? So are you. And so begins the Angel crush on Jean that we're going to be seeing for the next, oh, I don't know how many years.
Decades.
Yes. I just not the best issue. It had some good ads, though.
Well, why don't you tell us about
the ads? Are we ready to move on to that?
Let's do that.
Yeah, I was about to say, are we ready to move on? Because we got creepy Pac-Man guy on the inside cover again. He continues to make me wake up at night in a cold sweat. You know, it's like I have dreams where I'm at work and I turn around to deal with a customer and it's this guy and it's just like, ah!
And his amazing electronic kit is actually a torture device array.
Yeah, learn electric appliance repairing at home in spare time. Get a job, hippie. We have some other fun ones. Not really going to go into the Avengers or the Howling Commandos ad because we'll be talking about those in the Elsewhere sequence. Don't let them call you skinny, advises beautiful young actress Quinn O'Hara. Wow. What?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is an amazing ad to see now, because now this ad would be like, don't let them call you fat. And it would be some kind of weight loss drug. And this thing is basically saying, you know, no pads, no exercise or overeating. You too can be thin waist, big hipped, and stacked like a brick shit house.
Yeah.
So weight on tablets. Quick energy. I mean, the girl's kind of hot, actually, in that 60s sort of way. So I
know Hera. She was good looking stuff.
She looks like Annette Funicello.
Yeah, but this looks like the Annette Funicello that would let you touch her boob on the first date. Whereas Annette probably wouldn't let you do that.
I like where this is going. Giggity. Yeah.
Weight On is offered by druggists in four easy, fast-working, fully guaranteed forms. Weight On homogenized liquid emulsion. Boy, that sounds tasty. New Weight On liquid emulsion. Weight On tonic. Weight On condensed food tablets. So, yeah, so there was a point in our history where we didn't want girls that looked like they really needed to eat a cheeseburger once in a while. So
we wanted the girls post-cheeseburger.
Yes.
For me, that was yesterday.
But after they brushed their teeth.
Well, yeah. We've got a Dynaflex ad. We've talked about those in the past. They're creepy. Selling grit. Selling Grit, the New York World's Fair, Unisphere Savings Bank, which I guess if I was a kid in the 60s, that would be kind of cool.
Wait, that looks like something from the Stark Expo. I don't understand.
Can someone explain to me the timeline of the Marvel movies? Because Howard Stark's a young man in the 40s. Tony Stark's a young man today and is looking to be in like his late, you know, mid to early to late 40s. How is that his dad?
He bred late.
Apparently. So
Tony, I would say that Howard is like in his early 20s in Cap, and that Stark is in his late 40s. So and he would in be, the videos he have of his dad, his dad's kind of old.
So you're just assuming that maybe he was like in his dad was in his late 40s when he had his son?
Or even early 50s, yeah.
That would work. I mean, it works, obviously. I mean, we've seen stuff like that happen. I'm just confused by that timeline. Though it was awesome to see Howard Stark play such a large role in Captain America. I really dug that. And it made those A&W root beer cans make sense. Because I'm like, why is Howard Stark on this can? Camouflage paint.
I was just going to say, if you like Captain America, John and I actually do the Mighty Shield, a Captain America podcast, which you can find at mightyshield.com. I just figured it was there. Sorry.
And an awesome podcast it is. Camouflage paint used in World War II and in Korea by U.S. Marine commandos. Now you can become almost invisible.
But only if you're standing in the trees.
As the middle panel shows you attacking an Asian man. So that's kind of... another get a job hippies telling us that we can make $3 to $5 an hour starting soon, which is kind of sad because about 10 years ago, like $5 an hour was almost minimum wage. We've got a pinup, special pinup page of Cyclops. I always hate when the pinups are signed by the character. It bugs me in old Batman comics and old Superman comics, and it bugs the crap out of me here. Just like, I know he didn't sign that. He's a fictional character. So, though I do
we just talked about you about that on the episode of The Mighty Shield that we recorded the other day.
Really? Okay.
The next one's coming out because on the back of Captain America Comics 4 is a really awesome picture of Captain America and Bucky with a wooden picture frame drawn around them. And it's signed by Captain America and Bucky. And I was like, I think Mike has said that he disapproves of this sort of thing.
So there you go. We've got a hodgepodge ad. We've got a hey, fellas, now you can build your own go-kart. I'm sure that's safe. Though it's $1 for plans. They pay postage. So that was what, 10 cents maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Brother, can you spare a dime for a new $1 million He-Man body? I like the fact that this could be the new you is across that dude's crotch. This once skinny ABC pupil, Bill Butler, high school teacher, and now he's in jail for statutory rape.
Wow.
Three complete fishing outfits, which look kind of cool if you're into fishing.
It was corkscrew shaped.
Yes, it was corkscrew shaped. I can't even say it now. And Abe Vigoda wants us to draw on the back cover again.
So. That's what Abe does.
Well, it looks kind of Bela Lugosi-ish.
Let's paint this fucker.
Well, we had letters. We had letters. And
yes, we did.
And the thing is, we had Freddie, who was talking about, why don't we see Quicksilver on the X-Men? He's darn sure that it's going to happen. That's Freddie Milan from Brooklyn. Another one was Larry suggesting that Iceman is a very plain name. Why don't we name him Kid Cold? And that is Kid Cold with a K. And then that's just a bad name. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, it is.
The thing that really got my attention then was Miss Susan Steingasser. Who is actually, she's a housewife who loves to read the X-Men. And that's crazy. Not only is she a girl, she's a grown girl.
Man, you kind of want to meet her back then, because you know her husband works all day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about the latest issue of the X-Men with my penis?
It has some ideas.
It's corkscrew-shaped.
Wow, that's what people are going to be taking away from this episode. Perfect.
It's my Facebook status right now. Before we even finished recording. Marvel Girl pulled a boner on page 19 of...
I'm sure she did.
For those that don't know, the longstanding... we all get a laugh. This is issue number 4. But basically, a boner is a mistake. A goof, if you will. But that doesn't mean I can't laugh at the terminology.
Which is why on Growing Pains, Mike Seaver's friend was nicknamed Boner because he was a mistake.
Boner Stabone.
He was actually the son of Walter Koenig.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was, and he played the Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, Batman Dead End.
He killed himself last year. It was very sad.
I remember that, yeah.
Did you know
Boner... He actually did a really good job as the Joker.
He was
really creepy.
Dead End was an awesome little film.
until the aliens show up.
So. No, that was good. Loved that. Like, I wouldn't want to necessarily see that movie, but it was a really cool moment to see Batman face off with the freaking aliens and predators. That was cool.
So,
and to wrap up the letters, anyway, he's just referring to, I'm trying to figure out what she did on page 19. Oh, it was when Professor Xavier threw himself in front of the blast, and she didn't stop it.
Have you guys ever heard, like, old radio shows where they have commercials where people give testimonials about things?
Like what?
Like... Well, I'm looking at this ad for Mrs. Susan Steingasser from San Jose, California. And when I read it in my head, I read, "Though I am a housewife, I love to read the X-Men," which to me sounds a lot like, "Though I am a housewife, I still like to clean with, you know, whatever product they're hawking."
Oh, true. I see what you're saying. That doesn't quite seem legitimate.
You're never going to get a straight answer out of him now because he's not going to remember. But yeah, he did used to stack the deck of his own
letters pages.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he's like, well, maybe if I say that housewives are reading it, housewives will start to read it. It's like, I don't know if it was the second Nightmare on Elm Street film. The marketing division that was working for the film put it out there to the press that people were dressing up as Freddy Krueger, Rocky Horror style, and going to see the film at like midnight showings. So he hired a bunch of people to do that. And it turns out that a lot of people were doing it anyways, and he just didn't know that. So that would kind of make sense. I mean, I don't blame Stan because really and truly, Marvel Comics is the little comic book company that could, even though it was backed by Martin Goodman, it was failing, by the early 60s. You know, they had a crap distribution plan with with DC Comics essentially, and he was really trying to get this going as like a legitimate concern. So you do crap like that. Just because, you know, it's like the scene in Muppets Take Manhattan where, you know, they go to the restaurant and the rats are talking about the great new show that's coming out and all the people start talking about it. If I'm remembering that scene correctly. I think I am.
I have no idea. You lost me 2 tangents ago.
Yeah, I was about to say, forgive me if I when I reference again, because I will. It's my thing. I grew up on Dennis Miller humor.
Okay,
I can't help the man sub references like an MF-er because I like saying MF-er.
Like a Nightcrawler Bamf.
Oh, have I mentioned
like a Nightcrawler Bamf?
Remind me that earmark. I do have a Nightcrawler thing to talk about before the episode is through.
Alrighty,
but finish your.
No, my point is that I don't. care that he stacked the letters pages with his own letters, because if it got other people to write in, then it did its job.
True.
You know, if writing into comics was still kind of a new thing at this time, especially mainstream books. I mean, you know, people were writing into the EC books all the time, but you know, DC was the one that one started publishing letters in the first place. And then Julius Schwartz, in the late 50s started publishing addresses. So this was still kind of a new thing. So maybe people really didn't know that you could write into it, but if you see other people doing it, it'll make you want to do it. It's like podcasting. You know, you listen to enough podcasts, you're like, I want to do that. So,
and your life is never the same again.
No,
no, it's not.
You begin to miss things like sleep.
I really want to do like the you know, not even once commercial for podcasting where I'm getting a shower and then there's the dried out husk version of me going, don't do it.
Just don't, walk away.
Don't do it. Walk away.
Rocking back and forth.
You know what I'm taking away from this letters page, though?
What?
Is in the addresses, we have Brooklyn 1, New York, Bay City, Michigan, San Jose 28, California, Norwood, PA, Berkeley 34, Missouri. This was before the 5-digit zip code system.
Oh. Interesting.
Her name is Shart.
I don't know what that means.
The one from Berkeley 34, Missouri. Her name's Kathleen Shart.
Never trust a fart.
She's from Missouri, and so am I.
Isn't that Missouri?
No.
Never.
It's like try calling Chicago Chi-Town to somebody who's actually from Chicago. see where that gets you. I do like the in the special announcement section that this is what Stan refers to as complicated. Now, this gets kind of complicated, so listen closely. Sergeant Fury number 8, which is also on sale now, features the death ray of Dr. Zemo. And Doc Zemo is the same guy who heads the Masters of the Evil in the Avengers. But in Sergeant Fury, you'll meet Dr. Zemo when he was about 20 years younger, before he ever heard of Marvel superheroes. If you've got all that straight, yeah, actually, Stan, I do. And I think a bunch of 8-year-olds could get it straight, too. If 8-year-olds can understand the multiverse, they can understand the fact that one book takes place in the past and the other takes place in the present. But if you've got all of that straight the first time, you're better than Stan and Jack. That's not something I would admit to in a comic book.
They also acknowledge that fans have been asking to make the X-Men monthly.
Yeah.
But they can't do it. What they don't say, though, is that they do make the Avengers monthly at this point instead of the X-Men.
Were the Avengers doing that much better?
I guess. I mean, the books premiered at the same time, and from issue 6 forward, the Avengers was monthly. So I guess they were doing better, but it's actually going to be quite a while before the X-Men goes monthly.
I would make sense that the Avengers would do a little better because it had known properties in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, too.
They're the varsity team, as Michael Kaiser put it, or I think Michael Bailey may have done that. One of those two Michaels did it. I think you did it in the first episode.
Well, more to the point, I think, if you're a kid in the 60s and you're trying and you have a limited budget with which to buy comics, if you like Iron Man or if you like Thor or if you like, I won't say Captain America because, you know, he didn't have a title before Avengers, or if you like the Hulk, or maybe if you're an Ant-Man fan, because there had to be at least one for his strip to go on as long as it did. You know, for a dime and 2 pennies, you could buy the Avengers, which had all those characters in it. And I can't, you know, you watch any comic book documentary where they talk about team books. There's always going to be somebody, usually a professional, like in the Justice League documentary on the DC Justice League New Frontier DVD where Jimmy Palmiotti's like, well, you bought the Justice League because it had all the characters. And he says it really creepily, but you know the intent is there that it was the one-stop shop, and it's why they put Wolverine and Spider-Man in the new Avengers.
Yeah.
So, total marketing move, and I don't blame him. I really don't. So, but I could see the Avengers doing better than the unknown quantity of the X-Men, which has its fans. I'm not saying it doesn't, and I'm not saying it didn't, but you know, it was always the little book that could. It's kind of a miracle that they let it go into reprints instead of just canceling it outright.
Well, and that decision actually came a little bit later. There's about a 6 months gap between the issue 66 and 67.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a crossover this month.
Yes, there is.
So the world's greatest comic magazine, the Fantastic Four, issue 28 was released on April 9th with a cover date of July. And it features the X-Men. It has a very busy Jack Kirby, Saul Brodsky cover with a large gray bulbous clay-like creature that the Fantastic Four readers will recognize as the Mad Thinker's awesome android. And She-Hulk readers will recognize as Andy. And he's holding all the members of the two teams, and you can't really tell if the FF and the X-Men are trying to help each other or trying to fight each other. It's really kind of hard to see. And the banner reads, "Guest stars galore as the FF tangles with the X-Men." And that's not all. You'll also see the Mad Thinker, the Puppet Master, the Awesome Android, and the Fantastic Four is, of course, published monthly by K&M Publishers Sales Corporation. Because it's the mighty K&M Age of Comics. The opening splash the opening splash page of the book has the Thing hauling across the apartment a statue of himself that his girlfriend, the blind Alicia Masters, has finished carving. Meanwhile, Reed and Sue are reading about the mystery X-Men and a new exploit in the newspaper. The banner at the top reads, "The fabulous Fantastic Four are shocked to learn we have to fight the X-Men." Co-starring the sinister Puppet Master and the Mad Thinker and his awesome android. Written by Stan Lee, the leader. Drawn by Jack Kirby, the king. Inked by Chick Stone, the master. And lettered by Art Simic, the letterer. Not spending a whole heck of a lot of time on the FF stuff because this is an X-Men podcast, but basically Reed, Sue, and Johnny sum up who the X-Men and Brotherhood are in conversations amongst themselves, and they remind us that Johnny had an adventure with the Iceman in Strange Tales 120, and also that Alicia Masters, the Thing's blind girlfriend who makes the sculptures, she is the Puppet Master's stepdaughter, which of course Ben forgot because he's a terrible boyfriend.
Well, he is.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, it is.
He's all hands, too. It's terrible. It makes me sad.
Bed of mushrooms. Meanwhile, the Puppet Master enters the Mad Thinker's lair at the exact second that the Mad Thinker had predicted that he would. For those who don't know, the Thinker's shtick is that he plots and plans his crimes down to the second. With the aid of computers, he's able to predict the behavior of various complex variables that govern the world around him. This is his second appearance in the FF. Last time he stole an android that Reed Richards had created that looks like a giant gray man with a rectangular block of clay for a head. The android can imitate powers by touching the person who has them, so the Thinker has called the Puppet Master here, and after a little bit of, "I didn't want to work for you, but I'm awesome. Oh, you're awesome? Well, I guess I will work for you then." The Thinker and the Puppet Master get right down to work. The Thinker has examined every fact available about the X-Men, trying to deduce what their leader looks like. The result of this is a generic, featureless model of a human head. So that's a good job, Thinker, figuring out that their leader is human. The Puppet Master has a pile of the radioactive clay that he uses for his mental manipulation of people, and from the clay he sculpts a male figure in a business suit with a blank, featureless head. The thing is that he's supposed to make the figures look like his victims, and he's just not doing it here. The Thinker says that he's done, So Puppet Master uses his big bulbous eyes to stare really creepily at the reader, exerting his mental power to reach out through the radioactive clay to the mind of Professor Xavier. Xavier realizes that someone is trying to enter his mind, so he resists. The Thinker expected this to happen, so he tells the Puppet Master to use more clay, because he's figured it all out to the last centimeter. But guys, I thought just a moment ago that he said the statue was done.
That's what I heard.
In any case. After finishing the statue, he's able to subdue Xavier and gain control of his mind. Under the Puppet Master's influence, Xavier calls his students, and I'm doing air quotes even though you can't see them because it has quotes in the caption box, and I don't know why. The X-Men all come running in costume, and Xavier instructs them to find the Fantastic Four, trap them, and then destroy them. His justification is that he has read their minds and determined that they are evil. So he sends out his children to commit multiple homicide. The X-Men head over in their late model jetcopter, and I looked up to see what a jetcopter is. A jetcopter is a helicopter with a fancy name. So they land this fancy name. they land their fancily named helicopter on the top of the famous Baxter Building. Reed sticks his head out a window and sees that it's the X-Men, so he invites them in, and we have the first meeting between the Fantastic Four and the most unusual teenagers of all time. The X-Men start out nice enough, and then Cyclops requests the Fantastic Four's assistance in investigating an alien spaceship that's landed. Reed says he's too busy with science, so Cyclops decides to start blasting Reed's science and blasting Reed too. Torch helps against Cyclops, Torch helps against Cyclops, but Cyclops' optic blasts keep the Torch at bay. Marvel Girl lifts the Thing's sculpture. I'm not sure what she's going to do with this. She, does it to make the Thing do what she wants, but then he doesn't, and she can't hold the Thing up anyway. It drops and breaks, and she's very, very sad at this. She's like, I didn't mean to do that. But doesn't feel bad for too long. She starts twirling the Thing around to keep him off balance. Susan sees all this happening just before Angel grabs her from behind and flies her into the air, where Iceman lassos some ice around her feet to keep her from running away. There are more fighting shenanigans with the Beast getting wrapped up in Reed's body, which must be kind of weird, and the Thing getting his head and his feet covered in snow and ice. Finally, Reed has the Torch back off so they can figure out what's really going on. He agrees to accompany Cyclops, and the X-Men take Susan with them for insurance. The Angel flies up, gets the jetcopter, and brings it down to their level so the X-Men can board it from the apartment window. The remaining Fantastic Four follow in their pogo plane. On the way over to wherever they're going, the Thing makes a crack about the Beast and Reed having brains too big for anyone else's use. The X-Men land on a remote mesa west of New York and disembark, and suddenly a sharp, commanding thought reaches all the assembled X-Men. He orders them to fight the Fantastic Four again and completely subdue them. That is all. No sooner do Reed, Johnny, and Ben land and disembark when the X-Men light into them again, but this time surprises are in store. The island has been booby-trapped, which is a surprise to the X-Men, too. The Thing falls down a well, and then Lassie goes and tells... No, just kidding. Reed gets tangled in a revolving...
What's that, girl? Ben Grimm's trapped down a well?
Or Mike Bailey was trapped down a well last summer.
Or in the closet.
Yeah. Did you get your Beretta? So Reed gets tangled in a revolving reel device that pops up out of the ground out of nowhere. The Torch and the Invisible Girl get hit by... they get hit by asbestos-covered straitjacket missiles. And finally, the villainous villainy of the villains is revealed as a section of ground opens up and the Thinker and Puppet Master emerge with their android. The Puppet Master has his doesn't-really-look-like-Xavier doll in his hand, only now he's painted the clay so that its suit is the same color as the suit that Xavier put on that morning. He's controlling Xavier, who in turn controls the X-Men and puts them to sleep. The Beast magically disregards this command, though, and leaps at the Puppet Master, knocking his clay puppet to the ground and trampling it. After that, the Fantastic Four get free, the X-Men wake up, and it's a Kirby art fest as both teams go up against the two villains and their large mechanical sentinel. They're having trouble subduing the android because he can turn icy like Iceman or rocky like the Thing. And the magical ending comes when the no longer controlled Xavier sends his mental powers out and puts precise pressure on the exact control center of the android's artificial body, knocking it offline.
His penis.
By this time, yes, that is the exact place of pressure that was needed. By this time, the Thinker and the Puppet Master have made a getaway, with the Thinker grumbling the whole time that it's Puppet Master's fault they lost for letting his puppet get smashed. The FF and X-Men shake hands and part ways, and all is right with the world. This was the second of Marvel's two new teams to get the team-up spotlight treatment in the Fantastic Four, because the Avengers had gotten the two issues just recently. So it's not entirely fair the X-Men only get one, but whatever.
Well, they're bi-monthly, whereas the Avengers are monthly. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. When you say it out loud, it stops. Did y'all have any thoughts on the story?
Not a lot, no. It left me flat. It was just like, okay, that happened.
Yeah.
I've always thought the Puppet Master was really, really silly. And it's even more bizarre here when the puppet he's made doesn't even look like Xavier.
He's creepy, too. I mean, he's just, in general, just a creepy damn character. And the fact that, you know, Alicia Masters is his stepdaughter, I always got a real, like, kind of pederasty vibe off of him. And I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm just saying that because I think he's molesting his stepdaughter, who's blind.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's bad.
And he kind of looks like a pedophile, actually. Bald head, beady eyes, always talking about, you know, wanting to see things, muscly arms.
Paper boy.
The whole thing about, like, if whatever the Thinker was talking to Puppet Master about building the little puppet, and he says it's all done, and then he's like, oh, wait, no, add more clay. That was weird to me. Oh, and the one thing I was going to bring up was on page 5. When the X-Men run into Xavier's office, you're to find the Fantastic Four, trap them, and then destroy them. You can't be serious. It's some sort of subtle joke. And, I really, really wanted Cyclops to be like, do you think he's faking again?
No, seriously, do you think he's just messing with us? I mean,
because we know now that he does that.
It's not like this is the first time it's happened.
On page 6, Jean Grey and Susan Storm look like they're flirting, which kind of makes me happy. And at the bottom of page 6, no, never mind. That's been changed. Sorry, I'm trying to think if I have any other things I want to say about it, but I guess I really don't.
Yeah,
this was the first time we saw Jean Grey's new mask, and the pointy mask shape that she has, that basically is the Marvel Girl mask forever. I mean, it goes through some design changes, but that basic shape is what Rachel Gray is going to wear later.
I like Rachel Gray.
But who is that, John?
Yeah, that's opening a can of worms. Oh, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, but we're going to be talking. She's in the X-Men. I mean, she's in a big part of the mythology. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, we're jumping way ahead. As if there's an alternate future to be had.
What? Alternate view? Oh, you're crazy.
Well,
they never do that.
No. Well, in the real world, May of 1964 wasn't all that exciting, as we've seen. actually, there's just a few things, but they're big things. May 2nd, there was about 1,000 people, students, that marched through Times Square. About 700 in San Francisco. Basically, it became the first student demonstration against the Vietnam War. So things are heating up in the real world. Nelson Rockefeller defeated Barry Goldwater on May 26th in the Republican primary. Didn't really stall Goldwater's drive, but anyway. On May 12th, 12 young men in New York City publicly burned their draft cards to protest the war. So it's really the first act of that kind of resistance. So the world out there is getting crazy. But those are the only things that I had that were of noteworthy. The tension's getting, tighter in this country during this time.
But they can always read comic books.
They can always read comic books.
And they can see Spider-Man fighting Giant Man or the Green Goblin or the Hulk.
Is that the one we covered when I was on ASM Classics? That's a fun, fun story.
Which one is it?
Tales to Astonish 57 has Spider-Man fighting Giant Man.
Because as you know, John, wasps and spiders are natural enemies.
Right, so wasps are natural aversion to spiders. Yes. Go find Amazing Spider-Man Classics. I want to say it's episode 12. It's one of those episodes from last summer. Mike Bailey came on for a couple of episodes. We talked about Tales of Astonish 57, Amazing Spider-Man 16, and the first annual of the Sinister Six. Those are some fun episodes.
One of the best Spider-Man comics ever published, ASM Annual number 1.
Really, really is.
Even with the goofy little problems that it has, it is just an awesome... Just, you never had a comic back then where in one story it was so long and every fight scene had a splash page showing off the villain and the hero going at it.
Yeah. It's just
fantastic. And it guest stars everybody in the Marvel Universe.
So that's Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 1?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got that. Oh, I'm glad you said that. Anyway.
The Iron Man's up against the Mandarin. The whole thing with Avengers and Sergeant Fury that they were talking about in the special announcement section, this was one of the first times they tried to cross over their Silver Age superhero stories and Sergeant Fury from 20 years earlier, war comic. They had a character who, of course, became like this epic thing with Baron Zemo. But he debuted in the Avengers number 6 and Sergeant Fury number 8 at the same time. They both came out the same week. They were a co-first appearance for the character. Even though the stories didn't really relate at all, which would have been kind of cool if they had, it was still this first appearance of the same character. And then, Kraven showed up, and the Avengers fought the Masters of Evil, and Marvel Tales started its, some reprints. Not a whole lot else was really going on these 2 months in the Marvel Universe. Oh, the Unicorn, since we're going to see him, I think, in a future story on like X-Men 23, he's fighting Iron Man this month.
Oh, joy, the Unicorn.
Yeah.
Yay.
So that about wraps up this episode. Next episode, we will be covering issue 7 of the X-Men.
Woohoo!
Featuring... I've already forgotten.
The Blob?
The Return of the Blob.
The Return of the Blob, which I really like. It's a
good
story.
Nothing can stop the Blob.
And so, in the meantime, should you want to write us, you can do so at xavierspodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to xavierspodcast.com and... look at show notes, look at images, comment on the show. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Xavier's Podcast, and like us there to get updates for show postings and, interact with us on a more informal level by leaving comments or whatever you want to do there. And if you want to go to iTunes, you can download every episode of the show there. We ask that our iTunes listeners also leave a review should they be so inclined to tell the rest of the world why we're awesome and why everyone else should be listening. And until then, my name is John Wilson.
I'm Michael Bailey.
And I'm J. David Weeder.
Excelsior!
You can find Xavier's Podcast for Gifted Youngsters on iTunes and at xavierspodcast.com. To get in touch with the show, you can drop us an email. The address is xavierspodcast@gmail.com. And you can become a fan of the show on Facebook at facebook.com/xavierspodcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Yes, the X-Men have won, but only for now. Magneto is still out there, waiting, planning, plotting the destruction of the human race. But whatever the challenge, whatever the peril, the X-Men will be there.